Okay, so I want to welcome everybody to the Life Path Dialogues, and I'm Carla Woody. And tonight, what we're going to talk about has to do with lineage and the spiritual aspect of lineage. And I'll tell you how I came to this. I'm going to tell a story to kind of create a framework, and I've got a special guest tonight, Terry Hanauer-Brahm, and she's going to be talking about her family discoveries and so forth. And I want to share a story with you about something that happened to me over the last year. And so last January, I was down in Chiapas in Mexico, in southern Mexico, in my Maya Mysteries program. And as a part of that program, we had a woman who was Maya from Guatemala. She was a mom woman, M-A-M. That's the tribe that she comes from. And she's a day keeper. And what that means is that she essentially is a, they're called carriers of time. And they study the Dzogchen calendar, and it has to do with ceremonies on certain days, you know, when it's most beneficial to do that, things about when people were born and what that means depending on what day that they were born, and so forth. So she's a day keeper, and her name is Floridalma Perez Gonzalez. And this was the first time that we were going to be with her. She had offered to do a fire ceremony with us. And I'd never been to a fire ceremony from the Maya people in Guatemala, because that's something that they do that is done differently than in Chiapas, with the Maya people in Chiapas. And so just to kind of set the frame here, we were to meet at this old hacienda, you know, and it was just before it's starting to get dusk. And some of my group had been out doing whatever they were doing around in town and so forth, but this was a place that we were to meet and to have this ceremony. And so I went through the gate down there, through the wall. It's pretty nondescript, you know. I don't know if you've ever been down in that area, but, you know, on the streets, all you see are typically the walls to places, you know, and you never know really what is beyond that. You know, the house may be there. There may be a beautiful garden. And that was the case here, is when I went through the doorway, it emptied into this really beautiful garden. It was an old hacienda. And so I went wandering around back in there, and that's when I first saw Doña Flori. She was sitting in the grass and essentially making a place for the fire ceremony. So she was clearing away the grass and getting ready for that. One of the things that they do first is that they will put the symbol of the particular day from the Maya calendar, and they'll do that in sugar on the ground like that. And then they'll begin to, essentially what it is, it's an altar, you know, and they'll begin to build it up from that. So there would be big balls of copal, which is a type of resin, on top of that, and then pitch pine, candles, even sweets, things like that, rose petals all around. And by the time it's complete, it's quite beautiful. Well, the group had started wandering in, and she invited us to come and sit around the fire. She had already lit the copal, some of the copal that was in the pedestal incense burner, you know, beginning to kind of create a clearing and essentially calling on the spirits of the day and so forth. The ceremony was quite beautiful. She asked us each to essentially express our intent. She prayed in Maya and in Spanish, and calling on the grandmothers, grandfathers, inviting them into the space. And this is where it really started for me, because the Maya people are very connected to their ancestors, and they call on their ancestors for advice, and send them prayers and blessings, gratitude, all of those kinds of things during these ceremonies. And there, you know, there are candle offerings you make, and so forth. So this had been going on for some period of time, and then as we got toward the end, what she did was that she gave each of us 8 tapers, and these were made, they were tallow, each one of us, very thin tapers. And what she said to us was that when we felt called to do it, to come up to the fire, and as we were laying each one of the candles into the fire, to call out the name of our ancestors, our grandmothers and grandfathers, you know, calling them into the circle, giving them our prayers. And so people began to do that. And finally, you know, I was, I think, just about the last person in the circle, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, oh my God, I don't know the names of my ancestors. I don't know the names beyond 3 that I could even think of, that I even knew anything about. The tragedy for me was that my father's mother, I didn't even know her name. And actually, I wasn't sure that I knew his father's name. Now, my grandparents, only one of them was alive after I was born, so, you know, that I never had any connection in that way. But it finally, when I went up to the fire and I began to lay the candles into the circle, it just really got to me in such a way, because I realized I didn't know my people. You know, I didn't know my people, and it really saddened me. I realized that night after the ceremony was over that perhaps one of the draws that I had to the indigenous people is how connected they are to their lineage. It's I've always noticed at least some of the people that I've met here, like with the Hopi and Tewa and so on, and the way that they introduce themselves, you know, is who their mothers and fathers are, what clans they come from, how that connects them spiritually, it grounds them. And so it, as I said, it really saddened me. And so when I got back to where we were staying, I actually emailed my mother, and I told her about what had happened, that we had had this fire ceremony, and the meaning of it, and in the process of being in this ceremony, how sad I was that I didn't know anything about our lineage, really. And the thing is that what I knew was that she didn't either. You know, she knew very little. And so that's the email that I sent off to my folks. Well, the next morning, and this is where it gets a little interesting. The next morning, she emails me. And she said, well, you know what? It was the strangest thing that within the last couple of days that she and my father had an urge to start cleaning out things, and that they were going through these boxes and uncovered my father's genealogy. Wow. Now, isn't that something?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, even as I tell you about it, I get this kind of energy movement and chills and all of that because of the timing of it, you know. And so it was a distant cousin who had undertaken this, and they had forgotten that they had it and discovered it, rediscovered it in this box and so forth. And so that was really something. And so when I returned, this was January of 2012, when I returned back home again, I, you know, had discussions with my folks about that, and and I asked my mother if she would be willing to begin to search into her line, you know. And she agreed, and you know, she wanted to do it. And but what happened in reality was that she got stalled and frustrated, because I think that doing a genealogy is kind of like a fine art or a science or something, you know, because you reach so many dead ends, and if she didn't have enough information to begin with, you know. And so what happened there is that the project just kind of stalled, you know, she gave up. And so time passes, and in November, this Thanksgiving, I went out to see my folks in Ohio, as I do most Thanksgivings, and we had more discussion about family line and so forth. And I said to her then, I said, "Mom, why don't you let me ask Don? He's an old friend of mine. My family knows him. Ask Don to help you, because he got involved some years ago in searching his own genealogy, and now he's kind of like this expert, you know, and he has a website, and it's just something that he does, you know." And so she didn't want to bother anybody, and I said, "Look, he will be happy to do this," you know, he's somebody that is really into it. So I sent him an email and asked him if he would be willing to do that. And in the meantime, this was in December by that time, and so I go off to Chiapas in Guatemala, and I'm gone for 2 months, right? But here's what happened, is over the next couple of weeks, there was a flurry of emails that went back and forth between between Don and Don Boyd is his name, and my mother, and she giving him whatever information she had. And I'll tell you what, it was in no time flat that he had so much of my mother's line. He had so much of my mother's line. So now what we know is that as far as my, at least a good portion of my father's line, we can trace back to like 1720 in England. And on my mother's side, Ireland back into the 1700s, and Cherokee back into the mid-1800s. There's another possibility of another Cherokee ancestor back into the late 1700s, and that one is, you know, it gets a little tough to prove when it goes back that far. But the beauty of it is that in no time flat, I mean, it's as though this whole thing evolved and started with that fire ceremony. And what I want to say to you is that in January, we had another fire ceremony with Doña Flori, and I was able to, when I approached the fire, call out the names of my ancestors and invite them to the circle and share my prayers with them. And for me, that was just a really beautiful thing. What the sense I had somehow, and it's kind of emotional for me, it's as though there was something missing, you know? And it's even as if, why have I been doing the work that I've been doing, that it is so involved with indigenous preservation and so forth? And it's finally like, well, of course, you know, I mean, you've got it running in your own veins, and so why not? But what it does for me is, and I'm recognizing this, is that it really gives me some kind of spiritual grounding, I think, that I didn't have before, where it almost felt as if I was kind of floating out there. I didn't know my people, you know? I mean, it's like for any of us, who are our people? And with that, what I want to do is I want to segue over here to Terry, because she's got a really interesting story, and I want to provide her ample time to tell it, because it's very intriguing to me. So, when I invited you, first of all, so this is February 27th, and when I invited you to appear with me today, when I issued that invitation, you came back and said that was that it's almost synchronous because it's such a special day. So I'm wondering if you would want to talk about that, and then we can just go into your story.
Well, today, 70 years ago today, there was a roundup in Berlin, and it was the Jewish men and women that were married to Christian men and women. They were rounded up from wherever they were working, labor camps or wherever they were at. They were rounded up, and they were placed in this facility on Rose Street, which is in Germany, Rosenstrasse. And as all these people were collected, the wives and husbands, the Christian wives and husbands of these people, started searching for them because they didn't come home. And they found out that they were taken to this facility, and these women and men stood out in front of this building for, well, from February 27th till March 8th, demanding that their spouses be released. And so 70 years ago today is when they were all collected. And so for me, my great grandfather was there, my grandfather was there, my great uncle was there. I'm not sure if my grandmother and my grandfather or my father were there, but I do know that those three people were there for sure. And today, I mean, it's just amazing when you think about the courageous, men and women that stood outside of that facility. The Nazis had threatened to kill these people, that were outside, but they couldn't do that because it was right in the middle of Berlin, and there were other Jewish or other, Germans in the area. And if they would have seen that, it would have caused a lot of, it would have caused a lot of friction or, a lot of anger.
Well, I think the beautiful thing about this is that you're remembering them and talking about them on this day. And so there are no coincidences, I guess. I think that's, but you didn't know initially anything about that. So what caused you to start looking into your background? What is the story around that? How did it happen?
Well, I didn't know my family was Jewish. I didn't know my family had anything to do with the Holocaust. And when I was growing up, I would always ask questions, about my family, because I knew they were from Germany, but nobody ever talked about it. And so my father had passed away in 1981, and when he passed away, at his memorial, my grandmother came up to me and told me that they were in a concentration camp. My family was Jewish, and I was like, overwhelmed with all this emotion. And as soon as I started asking questions, she just turned away. She walked away and never talked about it ever again. And then she ended up getting Alzheimer's. So she never spoke about it. And then my great aunt, she would, she would just say, "You don't want to know. You don't want to know." And in 2002, right before she had passed away, she started telling me the names of my grandfather, my great grandfather, and my great great grandfather. And so I wrote these names down, and after she had passed away, I started writing letters. And in 2005, my uncle had found this envelope filled with letters. And so he gave me this letter, and it was written by my grandfather, but I couldn't read it because it's written in German. And I had it translated, and it turned out that it was his farewell letter to my grandmother while he was sitting on a train that was going to take him to a labor camp. And so this is where my journey actually started. I mean, this is where I really wanted to learn who he was and everything I could, you know, learn about him. And that's exactly what I did.
Wow. I can't even imagine. So what is, are you able to say what that says? You have a translation?
I do have a translation.
Yeah.
And have you?
Can I pass this around?
Sure, yeah. Did you get a chance to read the translation?
No, you probably haven't. No, I haven't.
It's very, very emotional.
I can imagine.
Every time I read it, I'm like, I start to like get tears in my eyes, but I have to find it here. It's probably, I don't have these very well marked.
What was that? Did you have any sense at all that there was something hidden?
You know, I had a feeling that there was a story in my family, in my family history, but I wasn't sure. But I felt so driven to find out what happened to my family, how they, you know, how they survived in the concentration camps. Now, that letter did go through the concentration camp with my grandmother. So somehow she protected that letter. And
well, I can imagine how precious it was to her, you know.
Now I just need to find. I should have had it marked in here. I wasn't even thinking about it. This book right here is all the documentation that I found on my family.
Yeah, so that is, it's called The Hanauer Family, Before, During, and After the Holocaust.
Yes, and it's just, you know, it's just everything, you know, correspondences that I had. And of course, I can't find it in here, and that's just terrible. I should have had it marked in here.
That's
and I didn't
all right.
think about it.
Well, can you paraphrase what it said, perhaps?
He wrote, "My dear love." Do you remember what it was?
What?
Oh, wait, you know what? I think it's right here.
We can wait.
Okay. I'll skim through here. There's so much stuff in here, and I just can't remember where it is in here. And it's not. This isn't really put together very well. I need to have it put, you know, into an order of understanding. But. But I'll find it, and then as soon as I find it, then I will read it.
So what can you tell us about your search? How did that unfold?
Well, as soon as I started writing letters to Berlin, I had historians from Berlin contact me because of where I sent these letters.
And so where did you, what kind of places did you send them to?
I just sent them to, the International Red Cross. I sent them to Yad Vashem, sent them to, it was so long ago, I can't even remember all the places, but I just, you know, I just kept sending out letters. I would Google Gutwinkel, where my grandfather was for 2 years of, you know, the last 2 years of his life. That was the labor camp that he was at. I sent a letter to, I Googled it, and then it said this historian's name who had put this book together of all the labor camps. And his name was Dr. Wolf Gruner. And he contacted me, and I mean, I just, you know, I Googled his name, and then I found an email address. And so I just sent him an email, and he started corresponding with some of his other friends in Berlin, and they sent me like a list of my family members, some of the members I never knew about, and where they ended up going, you know, where they were sent to, you know, where they ended up going to die. And so it was just amazing, all the people that, you know, started coming into my life. And the real interesting thing about the Rosenstrasse protest, you know, I didn't know my family was involved in that at all. And there was a movie that was made in 2003 called Rosenstrasse. And I just happened to be flipping through the cable channels. And I saw this, and it had subtitles. You know, it was like probably 5 or 10 minutes into the movie. And so I just sat down. I was doing laundry, but I just sat down and just started watching this movie. And I felt this connection to this movie. And so I went and I ordered it, and I just kept watching it over and over again. And 2 years after I purchased it, I had found a list that my great-grandfather had written of all the dates of his arrest. And I saw the dates that he was arrested, and it said Rosenstrasse,
mm-hmm.
and I just about had a heart attack because mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh, I was so obsessed with this movie, and
now
it was because I had a connection to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's how it's been throughout, you know, my journey is I will see something and I'll just feel like really connected to it, and then I'll learn that my family had a connection to it.
Wow.
And that's how I relate to things.
What I like about that story is that the person you contacted, that gentleman, it was obviously important to him, too, to contact these other people so that you could have your story. I think that's pretty amazing
mm-hmm.
that he went to
the great
contacting all these other people.
Well, and what's interesting is he's now a professor at USC, so one of these days I'm going to get to meet him in person.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And he had... Oh, go ahead.
No, I just said, wow.
Oh, yeah. And he actually connected me with this woman who is one of his students, but she's also a historian of the Auschwitz hospital,
mm-hmm.
where my grandfather had ended up, you know, at the end of his life. And she told me how he died in Auschwitz. Yeah, that he was, it was
Fenol injection
to the heart.
Mm.
So they die instantaneously. They just... And before my great aunt died, which was really interesting, is she told me that my grandfather wasn't supposed to die, but she never knew what happened to him. He just disappeared. You know, he was taken away during the Rosenstrasse protest. That was
mm-hmm.
the last time anybody had seen him. And that was my great grandfather that had seen him. And so nobody knew what happened to him once he left there. So my great aunt, my grandmother passed away without ever knowing what happened to him. And then I learned what happened to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's just been just an amazing, you know, an amazing journey just to be able to, you know, I kind of imagined what could have happened, but then to know exactly what happened, you know.
Right.
And then,
right.
you know, to know what his last 2 years of his life must have been
uh-huh.
like.
Yeah. So how many of your family were actually in the concentration camps? Because you said that, so was your grandmother a Christian woman then, or no?
Well, her mother was Christian, and her father was Jewish.
Okay.
And then my grandfather's mother was Christian, and his father was Jewish.
Okay. All right.
And so
So they were outside Rosenstrasse as your grand it was your grandfather.
My grandfather, great grandfather, and great aunt
were inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't believe that my grandmother and my father were inside because she was protected by her mother because her mother was Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were of mixed blood is what they called it. They called
mm-hmm.
them mischlings. They were of mixed blood. That you were protected as long as your Christian parent was alive.
Hmm.
And so my great grandmother had passed away on August 16th, and on August 20th they were arrested. And
really?
Yes. And then on September 8th they were sent to Theresienstadt in Czechoslovakia, which was a concentration camp.
Hmm.
And so my father, my grandmother, and my great-grandfather were there for 9 months, and they were liberated by the Russians.
Mm.
And that's where the postcard had been through.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty amazing to know that, you know, my father was 4.5 years old when he was taken to this camp, and most children didn't survive.
Right.
And out of 15,000 children that were taken through this particular camp, only 133 survived, and my father was one of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's this been like for you personally? As you know, what as far as the search, and what have you noticed that has happened for you personally? I mean, has it made an impact somehow?
Well, I think it has given me some closure and my family
mm-hmm.
because I didn't know why my father was very, he just never spoke about his childhood, you know, and for me, now I know why, mm-hmm. and so I can't be angry at him anymore, because I was really angry at my father.
I see.
I was very, I used to run away from home because I just didn't feel connected to my dad, because I felt like he was keeping something from me.
And he was.
Yeah, he had a totally, but now I know why. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, nobody wants to relive something like that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I just keep praying that with me sharing this information, that people that did survive it, that haven't spoken out about it, you know, tell their family members, so that their family members, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, what their family had endured, mm-hmm. you know, during that period in history.
And will explain some things like it has for you, and created some kind of closure.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I wanted to know who my grandfather was. Mm-hmm. I never saw a picture of my grandfather until 2005. And once I saw that picture of my grandfather, and then I had the postcard, it was like I could sense who he was, and I could feel his presence, you know, around me, wanting me to know his story. I mean, mm-hmm. I could really feel that, you know, he's been with me this whole journey, because he wanted me to know, mm-hmm. you know, what he went through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it's just been an amazing, I mean, I just, every time I look at my book, I'm like going, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have, you know, so much documentation.
Yeah, that's an unusual thing.
And in 2007, this man had contacted me from Bavaria. That's where my family was from. And he said that he had contacted me because I had sent something to the registrar down in Bavaria. You know, I just asked if they had any information on my family, because I had traced my, you know, to my great-great-grandfather. And he was born in Wiesenfeld, mm-hmm. Bavaria. And so this man contacted me and said, we found your family tree. And I'm like, you found my family tree? They found it in a Catholic church. Hmm. And it's dated back to 1727, to Abraham Hanauer.
Wow.
And then his son was Moses Hanauer. So my 5 times great-grandfather was Abraham. My 4 times great-grandfather was Moses. And then my 3 times great-grandfather was David.
Hmm.
So I felt such a, I mean, it was just amazing, you know, that the names are so, you know, biblical. And,
right.
You know, it was just amazing for me to, you know, to receive that.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's just been a crazy, because I never expected to, you know, learn that. But it has a detailed lineage of, you know, all of my great uncles, my great aunts, they had farms in Bavaria. Their farms were taken away by the Gestapo, has, you know, Gestapo numbers, where they were sent to and where they were murdered. And, I mean, just amazing. Just, you know, you don't even think about, you know, how far, you know, you're going to learn your history. And I never thought, you know, because of the Holocaust, I never thought that I would find, you know, something like that. So it's just been amazing.
Well, I'm guessing as much as it brings closure to you, it must have been heart-rending as well.
I found it.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Oh, good.
Okay, so this is the postcard. And it's dated March 3rd, 1941. My dear Ursula, now at day's end, I want to send a few lines. At noon, you were standing by the train, and I thought you had already left. Just as the train started to pull out, the wife of one of the soldiers said that you are still standing there. I looked right away, but you had already started to walk away. That made me so sad, because you were standing there, and I didn't look to see if you were still there. That is the reason I wanted to write to you immediately, so you'll know that I'm always with you in thought, and I will always be thinking about you when there may be bad days like maybe today. Always know that there is someone thinking about you. Dear Ursula, I hope you won't have to suffer because of me. I hope I hope all will be good again. I hope to hear from you soon.
so I can stop worrying about you. Greetings and kisses from your loving, sometimes a little stupid, Hans. Give Yuri a kiss from Papa." And Yuri was my father's name when he was born.
Uh-huh.
And I never knew that. When I knew my father, his name was Ralph Yuri Hanauer. And so his birth name was Yuri, and I didn't learn that until 2005.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's just beautiful. Thank you, Terry.